Hello, and welcome to Diabetes Dialogue, Therapeutics, Technology, and Real-World Perspectives. Diabetes Dialogue is a monthly podcast hosted by myself, Diana Isaacs, and Natalie Bellini, providing a regular news roundup of the latest clinically applicable insights across diabetes and metabolic diseases, with a focus on leveraging technology to improve care. Produced by EndocrinologyNetwork.com, the audio version of Diabetes Dialogue, Therapeutics, Technology, and Real-World Perspectives is available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, with a video version available only on EndocrinologyNetwork.com. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of Diabetes Dialogue. I'm Diana Isaacs, and I'm with the amazing Natalie Bellini. And this is a very special edition where we are going to talk all about what we learned at ATTD, which we both recently attended. Before I do that, though, I wanted to follow up on tirzepatide because we talked about this in our last episode. And like right after we, you know, had that episode, there was new data that came out called the SURMOUNT-1 trial. And this top line results were recently released by Lilly. And this was done in people without diabetes. And it was really amazing because they showed that there was actually a 22.5% weight loss. So on average, 52 pounds for each participant. Now, again, this was done in people without diabetes, just people that, you know, had obesity. But wow, we have not seen a drug like that before. So as a reminder, this is a GLP-GIP agonist. So this would be really a first in its category. So that's pretty exciting. And, you know, we're hearing rumblings that this will get approved soon. So Natalie, your take on this?
So my take is that I am very excited. Obesity is a true medical issue and challenge in the United States. And I do think that it's important to note that we see weight loss with a GLP and now a GIP in patients with obesity, always greater than patients with diabetes. And we could spend an entire program just talking about the challenges of weight loss coupled with diabetes, but we are very excited as well. And we expect dual indications at some point, one for diabetes and one for obesity, just like we've seen with other similar GLP-1 drugs.
Yeah, definitely. All right, let's talk about ATTD now.
So ATTD in Barcelona, Spain this year, 4,200 participants, the largest conference for them ever for ATTD. Some people attended virtually, but a lot of them attended live. There were several sessions concurrently run. And the day that before ATTD started on, we got to attend together, Dr. Isaacs and I, the Abbott Diabetes School, Continuous Glucose Sensing School. And both of us have done lots and lots of continuous glucose sensors. I prescribe them every day that I see patients. And I thought this will be a great review. And actually, I found several pearls of great advice, great tracking, great how do I look at patients a little bit differently. So we talked a little bit about what do we need to do to look at glucose data and how to organize that data. And I thought they had some good tips there. Data sufficiency is something that always comes to mind, right? So we need at least 70% of 14 days patients using the sensor. And why is that? We know it's because if we get less than that, we're missing too much data to make a great interpretation. So that's something that, again, was repeated. What did you take away, Diana?
So many great things. So yeah, so one of the things was that blew my mind a little bit is on glycemic variability. So we have this metric in the CGM reports called coefficient of variation. And basically, you know, the rule of thumb is if it's over 36%, it means the glucose is less stable. There's more of that roller coaster of up, down, versus if it's under 36%, you know, glucose is more stable. The thing I never heard about before, though, is that that metric really includes inter and intra variability, meaning like during a day, you know, someone could have a lot of variability going from breakfast to lunch, right? And they might have high glycemic variability. But there's some people that actually are really consistent during the day, but they have, maybe they have a big difference between weekends and weekdays. So that number doesn't really tell you the difference. And thus you really have to go into the day by day tracings to really see
where the variability is stemming from. And I never had thought of it that way. So that was kind of a unique thing. And I wonder in the future if maybe they will differentiate that a little bit better, you know, so that it's easier to kind of understand where that variability is coming from.
So another thing that I learned at this meeting was that what is a good CV to predict time below range? And this, one of the presenters talked about, if you get above 40%, it is a very good predictor that you're also having problems of time below range of less than 54%. So if you see as a clinician that the CV is approaching 40%, you need to look for that hypoglycemia because it's almost always present. And I thought that was a great, easy, you know, we're looking to not just do this as clinicians, you and I, but to bring this into primary care, to bring this into practice for everyone. So you see 40 and you should be automatically looking down, what is happening with that variability?
Yeah. And I also, one of the other things was interesting was hearing out of Italy, they recently published this paper about CGM interpretation, specifically with LibreView, but the concepts really, I think, can be used for overall CGM interpretation. Mm-hmm. And it was very interesting. I hadn't seen this paper before, and it provided a very kind of systematic way of reviewing data and focusing on that glucose variability and that time below range. But also it had these boxes of things to just consider when someone's not, you know, not meeting their targets or not optimizing their time in range, like, you know, how are they bolusing? Are they, you know, pre-bolusing, bolusing in advance of eating? And I thought, you know, we've done some work like with the data model, with our, you know, CGM data right. interpretation. And so I just thought it'd be interesting to take some of those concepts, but I know this is just an area where people, I see people struggle and people ask me a lot, like, okay, so I have this report, I have this AGP report, like, how do I really quickly do something with it? Because I don't have an hour to spend analyzing every bit of this report. So I thought that was kind of neat.
I agree. I think that, you know, we all have this data and what do we do with it? And there are several models out there to use. And actually, I think we're going to hear more about options to make it as easy as possible at ADA this year.
Awesome. Yeah, I know you've got a talk coming up at ADA as well. The other thing, and this wasn't specific to like Libre, but one of the presenters introduced us to this app called Diabetes M, and it's actually a dose calculator. And my patients ask me all the time, like, is there a dose calculator? Is there a good app? And so this app is a dose calculator, meaning, you know, people can put in their carbohydrates and their glucose values, and you can set it up where it will help you to calculate how much insulin to take. But also what was unique about this app is that it incorporated, or it can incorporate, trend arrows from the CGM, which I thought was so cool because then you could add or subtract insulin based on the direction the glucose is going. So I've downloaded the app and I, you know, plan to start using it with my patients. So
that's interesting. I thought the same thing. And actually, when in downloading the app and looking at it, one of the things this clinician mentioned was, sometimes we look at the data and we have no idea what the patient's doing. Are they underestimating? Are they overestimating? And what he suggested was saying to the patient, follow the directions for 2 weeks for me. And let's see where that way, at least it will help us figure out where the challenges are, right? So are they overcorrecting? Are they undercorrecting? Are they underestimating carbohydrates? Are they overestimating them? And are they getting too aggressive or not aggressive enough? At least it's consistent. And then we can make changes that are proper to the patient, right? And I thought that was a great idea. It doesn't have to be used all the time. He said, if they'll just use it for the few weeks before they come in each time, it'll help me make different decisions. But I did too. I love the arrows because, again, you're treating that trending direction on top of the blood glucose and the carbohydrates about to be consumed.
Definitely. Yeah. Another app I like is Under My Fork as well. That does not work with Libre data, unfortunately. It works with Dexcom data, but it allows people to take pictures of their food and then it analyzes the trends, you know, before and after to see if adjustments need to be made. So that's kind of neat, you know, technology. So I'm going to switch gears a little bit and talk about another really hot topic at the meeting, which is smart pens or connected pens. And we both spent a lot of time in the exhibit hall, and there's a number of companies that are putting out these devices. So for those that are not familiar, this is basically like taking insulin pump technology to people using insulin pens. And, you know, allowing people help to calculate their insulin doses and recording those doses. So it helps the person with diabetes, but then also helps the healthcare team to like have that other half of the data. So you can better advise people on making changes. So one of the things, you know, that was fascinating to me is how many companies are out there, but many don't have, I guess, the full gamut of possibilities. So what I mean by that is many companies are recording the doses. So for example, we saw Sanofi has a cap out there that can go onto pens, the Sanofi SoloSmart. And it does, it, you know, you put it on, it's like a button, it records the dose that was taken, but it doesn't have a dose calculator. Novo's was really similar to that. So Novo has the Novo Echo. And it, you know, it can pair with a mobile app to record these doses so that, you know, the person, the healthcare team can see it, but it's not helping the person with diabetes to actually calculate the dose. So what I'm most interested in is like, how can we, because what I worry about is if it's not offering that to a person, like what's the incentive to really use it? Like, I get it. Like, okay, it can record the dose and that's nice. You could look back. And if you forgot or you weren't sure you took the dose, that's helpful. But I feel like we could do so much more than that. So fortunately, we have two devices in the US that do that. We have the InPen and we have Bigfoot Unity. But what I was, you know, which are both great, but one of the ones that really stuck out, Natalie, and I know we were all excited when we spoke to them, was this Insulock. And what I really liked about that is it went a step beyond what the current devices do. So it did have dose calculator integration with the CGM or BGM, but it also incorporated like what Under My Fork does. It allows people to take pictures of their food and bring that into the full report and everything. So I thought that was really neat. Natalie, any impressions you had on the connected pen space?
So I think that there's lots of different kinds of patients out there. And I think sometimes, a lot of the times for lots of our patients, we do small, medium, large meals, right? You're going to take 5, 7, 9. You're going to take whatever it is, 10, 13, 17, and 20 if you go out to eat kind of dosing. And for those patients, for the patient that is not going to do more, I think there's going to be now, right, already, and in the future, more options. And I really think that we have, because I see a gamut of the patients, right? I see type 1, I see type 2 on multiple daily injections, you know, biggest meal injections, basal only, that this is, connected pens in general are going to help us, and the more the merrier. You know, I really want patients to have a choice and I want to find the solution that works for them. Just like we do with GLP-1 daily versus weekly, with, you know, pumps versus pens and all versus. So I want them to have as many options as possible. I have a lot of patients that will never take a picture, that don't even want to tell me what they're eating. So I want to make it that everyone has their own place in the world in choosing their management.
Yeah. And one of the things, so I was hoping, you know, Lilly has the Tempo pen that's also coming out soon. Unfortunately, you know, we visited them at the booth, because it's not FDA cleared and it's not cleared in other countries right now. They really couldn't tell us much. We took a picture of what it's going to look like, but we didn't hear much more than that. One of the things to think about though, is like when you use a specific device like Novo, Sanofi's or Lilly's, it only works with their insulins. And so thinking about that, you know, like Lilly, their only long-acting insulin is Basaglar, which is still fine. It's a fine insulin. But what that means is for all your patients that are using insulin degludec or using, you know, glargine U300, they're not going to be able to use that device. So therefore it's kind of appealing to me, products like InPen, Bigfoot Unity, or this like Insulock that work with multiple types of insulins. That's really appealing. Of course, one of the other barriers though is the connectivity with CGM. So for example, you know, Bigfoot Unity only works with Libre 2. InPen only works, well, actually it works with Dexcom G6 and Guardian 3. So you have two options, but there's also that, you know, I just want people to have choices. So the right. more, you know, the more options, like if someone wants to use a Libre and they want to use InPen, you know, it'd be so nice if that data could just all be merged together to make it easier for everyone.
I agree. And the other thing too, is sometimes insurance drives our choices. So sometimes insurance will say, I need someone to use Basaglar versus Lantus brand, right? Even though glargine is glargine, right? And then they have to use Novolog with that versus Admalog or Humalog or Lyspro. And they are telling us which rapid acting, not me deciding for the patient or the patient deciding with me, because we do need to start with the lowest branded copay for these patients. I mean, that's how I feel about it. So I may have a connected fast acting pen, but not able to use the basal part of it, and vice versa, you know, and that's going to be a real challenge, because do we just use the fast acting? Do we just use, and some of the companies are not tied to the product and some of them are. So Bigfoot isn't tied to their product, right? You can put a Bigfoot cap on almost any pen because they send each different one. Whereas the caps coming from Novo Nordisk or Lilly or some of the branded companies are going to only cover their own brands. There were several other companies that did make different pen caps for different brands, not available yet in the US though. So we're excited about seeing what does actually come to the US and see what happens in the next year. I think it's going to change dramatically.
Definitely. So I know we talked about CGM last time, but there was so much new information there. So Natalie, what can you tell us about some of our learnings about CGM?
So Libre 3 is available in Europe now. So we can start with Libre 3. We, at the booth, they, all the representatives had buttons on with 7.8% for 7.8% MARD. Remarkable. We were very excited to hear that and see their data. And I will tell you that their algorithm didn't change. So when you do a study, and then you repeat the study, sometimes the MARD goes up or down, doesn't it? So I think that it's a different group of patients. It's a different, and they got a different MARD, and they should be very proud of that. I will say the G7 also was at the booth, and we were very excited about the G7 as well as Libre 3. Both of them have reduced their footprint that's going to be on the body itself has been reduced significantly. And G7's MARD was reported at 8.2%. So do we say, wow, I like one versus the other? Well, you can't compare apples to oranges. Both trials were done differently. So that's not a comparator. I can tell you that I don't know that in my lifetime I ever thought we would drive a MARD this low. And I am completely comfortable about making insulin decisions using Libre 2 and G6. So the idea that I'm going to get better data for my patients and better decision-making with the new sensors, I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled with for this.
Yeah. And one of the things I learned about Libre 3, so it will be real time, like fully real time. Yes. You don't have to scan it. But one of the nice things about the scanning is that you can see how engaged a person is. Like you can see how much they're scanning it. And that actually will still be available with the Libre 3. You can tell in the reports every time a person looks at their number and their data. So I thought that was kind of interesting. The other thing I learned about Dexcom's G7 is that essentially, you know, the warm-up time is going down to 30 minutes, but you can actually put the sensor on 30 minutes early and completely get rid of that warm-up time. So, I mean, that's amazing. Going from 2 hours, which can feel like an eternity, especially if you're using like an automated insulin delivery that needs that data to adjust insulin, to essentially now not having to deal with that. That's amazing. And then the other announcement that came out while we were there is this collaboration with Libre 3 and CAM diabetes algorithm. So that's like an automated insulin delivery algorithm that's available in the UK and working with the Ipsomed pump. So these are not available in the US right now, but like what a cool collaboration. You know, we haven't yet had a Libre, you know, in an automated and AID system. So that's pretty cool to, you know, see that that's up and coming.
The other thing is we now know that with Libre 3, with real-time data, they have signed agreements with both Omnipod and Tandem. So we believe that in the future, now that there, it is real-time, our goal is that those agreements come to fruition and our patients will be given yet another choice. So you would like a Tandem T-Slim X2 pump and you would be able to use a Dexcom or a Libre 3 with it, as well as with Omnipod.
Definitely. So I know we've gone through so much information today. There's so much more to say. I mean, also Beta Bionics had a readout there. They're going to do more at ADA, but like that's this dual hormone pump, but they did the arm with the, just the single hormone, just the insulin. And what's unique about this pump is you don't have to put in you put in no settings. You just put in the weight and set up the CGM and it just starts working, right? And they showed that there was actually a 0.5% A1C improvement between the control group and the group that actually used this. And that time in range increased from 51% at baseline to 65%. So we're going to hear more about that at ADA, but oh my gosh, what an incredible meeting. It was so amazing. I wish we had more time to share, but we will in future episodes. So thanks so much for tuning in and have a great day, everybody.